Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines is back in the headlines in a big way. American and German media hint that some so-called pro-Ukraine group might have been behind the attack. Little evidence was provided. Is the West starting to have second thoughts about the Kyiv regime? Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest Wilmer Leon in Washington. He is a political scientist, author, and radio talk show host. In New York, we have Jim Kavanaugh. He is a political analyst. And in Jersey City, we have Sarah Flounders. She is co-director of the International Action Center. Her recent book is Sanctions, a Wrecking Ball in a Global Economy. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Sarah, let me go to you first in Jersey City. A month after Seymour Hersh's blockbuster report, and I think all of us would agree he's probably the greatest living journalist of his, of our time, certainly of his generation. 1 month later, on the same day, the Americans and German media come out with an alternative theory to the case, okay? I mean, I'm sure that's not a coincidence, okay? What do you draw from all of this? I mean, I've said this whole conflict from the beginning is a propaganda war, but this one is, this is an interesting wrinkle. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, it's absolutely outrageously, almost ridiculous and funny, a very strange excuse. But it's also the role that Ukraine plays as a proxy of the U.S. and as a complete pawn. And that means in anything, they're supposed to take the fall. And it's like saying, my dog did it. You know, when you have a pit bull on a leash and it's doing the barking and so on. I didn't do it. Now, everyone knows at this point, not only based on Seymour Hersh's article, which was extremely well-researched, in-depth, and really interviews and new information. From the very beginning, the Nord Stream explosion was contested in the U.S., in Europe, throughout, in Germany, of course, by Russia. Seymour Hersh's article was important because it was really substantive by a credible researcher that very clearly showed the U.S. role. And before that, even, the U.S. had made clear that they would do this. Biden made it clear that we have our ways and we will stop the Nord Stream. So they stopped it, and now they're putting up an excuse, which isn't even intended to be credible. It's just a way of for U.S. and Germany to continue to talk, although Germany knows very well who has absolutely wrecked their economy.
Yep. Wilmer, let me go to you in Washington. I mean, it's really quite interesting. If we look at the timeline. The Chancellor of Germany, Schulz, I refer to him as Sergeant Schulz on this program. He goes to Washington, D.C. for a day, meets Biden for about an hour. There's no press approach whatsoever. It's a very small delegation. He gets back on his plane, and then we have these reports coming out here. What in the world do you think was said in the Oval Office? You know, Schulz saying, I know you guys did it. I need a way out because German public opinion is moving against you, against the American administration for what it's doing to its economy. I mean, he's not the brightest politician, but he can see, he can read the tea leaves. Go ahead in Washington.
Well, I think what President Biden told him was, here are your marching orders, and your narrative will continue to be, I know nothing, I know nothing, I know nothing. And it's important to remember that initially the United States came out and said, well, obviously Russia blew up their own pipeline. Then Sweden came out and said, oh, we've done an investigation, but we can't release the information because of national security. And now Seymour Hersh comes out with his incredibly researched articles and says, nah, I think there's a different culprit here. And now we're fed this line of it's some pro-Ukrainian folks in a sailboat that that dove, you know, to the bottom of the Baltic Sea carrying pounds and pounds of C4 explosive. I guess the answer is when you have absolutely zero credibility and you have absolutely nothing you can say that is plausible, then you'll just say anything and expect, because you're the United States, that people are going to fall in line and agree with what you say and believe what you, or they won't believe it, but at least they won't contest it.
Yeah, you know, Jim, if you know, Sweden and Denmark, Germany, they've conducted their own investigations. So if they could prove the Russians did it, they would have already told us. But they can't prove it. That's why they haven't released their investigation. It makes perfect logical sense. Jim in New York.
Well, of course, they've given up on the Russians did it theory. That was ridiculous from begin with. And after the Seymour Hersh very detailed, Sarah says, very detailed explanation of exactly how this was done and by whom. Now, they've given up on that, and they got to kind of, so what they've done is, and then they went for, but, you know, they all said, every one of these governments, it had to be a state actor. This couldn't have been done by anybody who wasn't supported by a state actor. Now, all of a sudden, after, as Wilmer says, they call Schultz in for a meeting and say, here's the story and you're going with it. You know, it's some yacht with the skipper and Marianne and, you know, and they went out with 1,000 pounds of C4 and dove to the bottom of the ocean. And It's really silly. And Seymour Hersh's reaction yesterday when we heard it was classic, and they can't be this stupid. But as Wilmer says, really, it's not about believing. There's two things that are going on here that you know, first of all, they have created now, using the New York Times and the Washington Post, you know, who covered this story. The Times just mentioned Seymour Hersh in passing to dismiss him. The Washington Post, I think, didn't mention it at all. So what they're trying to do is create actually search engine optimization. So when people look up now the story of the Nord Stream sabotage, these things are going to come up first, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and all the mainstream media that are going to repeat them. And two, there's this very interesting wrinkle in here where they're saying, you know, yeah, it was this Ukrainian group, and we don't think Zelensky had anything to do with it. But the Ukrainians have done some things that really might undermine European support from them. You know, if I was the underboss, And I was listening to the capo de tutti capi saying, oh, you know, this guy has done a little bit off the reservation on his work with us, I'm starting to be a little bit worried about whether I was going to be cut out. And I think the United States has laid the groundwork for that in a bizarre way with this.
I think that's a very good point. Sarah, it was the New York Times is mentioned here. I think that it says everything that we need to know about today's media. Seymour Hersh used to work for the New York Times. He was their greatest journalist, you know, in our lifetime, and they disavow his existence, essentially. It is really amazing how they've turned their back on journalism and just become stenographers for power. Sarah.
Well, it's a completely complicit media that will carry any story handed to them by the administration at this point, and it's not even intended to be credible. The New York Times didn't even cover, as was just said, Seymour Hersh's article when it came out. It was a blockbuster. You could see it everywhere, and yet not in the corporate media. It was a non-event, and Seymour Hersh has become a non-person, not referred to, not mentioned. And these totally ridiculous stories are given front page coverage. And front page coverage means that the marching orders for every other media is to make this a prime time story. It's ridiculous, and it's criminal. It's really a criminal violation of any standard, even of journalism. And it's why corporate journalism has less and less hold for so many people. They look everywhere else for news, but not the Times and the Post.
You know, Wilmer, I don't know how much the U.S. and NATO collectively spends on intelligence and covert operations and all. It's a huge amount of money by any standard. But they can't figure out who blew up the pipelines. I just have a hard time. You know, they should be defunded. I mean, if you can't figure this out, okay? This happened in a Balkan thing. You know, they have satellites. All the ships ping it, you know, as they go through the water. And you still can't tell us who did it? I mean, it's not only is their story not plausible, is that they look like they themselves look incompetent. They are all Sergeant Schultz at this point. Go ahead in Washington.
Well, I think also, in spite of all the intelligence apparatuses that they have, they probably need to call China, because with the spy balloons, China would be able to tell them exactly who it was that did this. But it's not a matter of credibility. It's It's not a matter of intelligence. It's a matter of narrative. It's a matter of objective. And it's a matter of trying to justify or to trying to justify the what can't be justified, because you have to go back to the very premise of the conflict between Ukraine and Russia, with the United States and NATO being the motivating forces behind it. So if you start out with an irrational action that has an irrational premise, then all of your justification and rationale is irrational.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How do you explain the unexplainable? How do you rationalize the irrational? You 1 + 1 will always equal 4 as far as they are concerned, no matter how many angles or how many different types of mathematics or calculus you try to use. They will always tell you that 1 + 1 = 4.
Well, you know what's really interesting, Jim, is that Seymour Hersh has made it very, very clear that he's not done with his investigation here. So, Seymour Hersh was given such a gift here. So what he'll be able to do is sidebar everything that German and or the official media is saying, and he's going to be able to prove them wrong. I mean, the humiliation will only continue. But of course, it will never be in the mainstream. 30 seconds before we go to the break, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, Seymour Hersh also said, which is something everybody should realize, all the infrastructural companies of oil development in the world know who did this. Everybody knows who did this, you know? And this is, you're not kidding anybody. As Wilmer says, this is not a matter of being credible. It's a matter of demonstrating power. It's almost Foucaultian demonstration. We control the narrative. Watch, we can make you believe anything. And unfortunately, that's true for a lot of American media consumers, not so much for the rest of the world. And that's the problem.
Well, the world doesn't believe the official story, obviously. Yeah. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Sarah in Jersey City. The title of this program is Ditching Kyiv with a question mark here. And, you know, over the last news cycle, people I trust in the media, consortiumnews.com, people like that, you know, there's a lot of speculation here. Is the Biden administration looking for an off-ramp for its totally failed policy in dealing with Ukraine? Because as you've already mentioned, you know, it's getting a little bit easier to throw Zelensky under the bus, okay? Because there's, from what we understand, and maybe this is all manufactured, but there is a growing frustration within the administration that this hasn't worked out very well, and we have to turn our attention to China. That's what I keep hearing from a variety of sources here. But I mean, the official narrative is, or what we heard from German media and the New York Times, is that, you know, they don't want divisions to grow between Germany and Ukraine. Well, they already see what's going on here. So what do you think it really is mean when it comes into the larger picture of the conflict?
Well, first of all, the U.S. always needs a fall guy. And they treat their proxies really in a shoddy way, and they will drop them at a moment's notice. And also there's the U.S., quote, experts that will always say this is the wrong war at the wrong time. So let's pivot from Russia to China. That's definitely going on. But I do think that the Biden administration is absolutely politically committed to this war and to keeping it going. And the whole team is committed in that way. So they may drop Zelensky or act like they're going to, but I think they're going to try to keep this going. In one way, it's been a success for the U.S. As a war, it's a total disaster for all of the people involved, but it broke the relations that yeah. between Germany and Russia. Yeah. And that was its intention, between the EU and Russia, not only on Nord Stream, on oil, on gas, but on the extensive trade, which was 10 times the size of their trade, the EU trade with the U.S. So they've managed through sanctions to break that. and they want to keep that broken. They want to batter this down, even though it's a disaster for the entire EU. And frankly, Russia has, in this war, is moving forward and has been able to match them in every sense. So they're not expecting a successful outcome, but I think they're committed to keeping it going at this point. They're not negotiating on anything of substantial purpose. They are revving up against China. They are continuing on other fronts, but I don't think they've stopped this.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point because, one of the problems, Wilmer, let me go back to you in Washington, is that what is the definition of winning? What is the definition of losing, victory, and all this? I mean, the way I have looked at this conflict from the very beginning is security. Now, everyone wants security, and that's the way to settle this, okay? But the West doesn't want to do that. Sarah perfectly put it together, is that the U.S. has actually won on a strategic level. It's separated Europe from its relationship with Russia, and maybe to some extent to China, as we go along here. So, I mean, the deal with Ukraine is that they have to find somehow to declare victory, which of course won't be victory, but it'll be a way for the conflict to be wound down, and that means sacrificing Zelensky, of course. Go ahead, in Washington.
Well, a number of things there that you've laid out. I think you started the question with what's the definition of win? And the definition of win from the American perspective is shareholder value. Lockheed Martin has won. Raytheon has won. McDonnell Douglas and Boeing, they've won. I go back to the July of 2020, I guess, and they asked the CEO of Boeing who Boeing preferred to win the election, Donald Trump or Joe Biden. He said, doesn't matter to us because we're going to get paid anyway.
Yeah.
So the definition of win for the United States, I think, at the end of the day, is shareholder value. In terms of the relationship between Russia and the EU, I think it's still a little too early to call that game, because one of the things that very few people discuss in this context is Russia has a history that is centuries long. China has a history that is centuries long. The United States still hasn't reached 600 years. So they see a different timeline and horizon than we do. And that's why I believe their tactics, their strategies are different than ours. Russia is fighting an artillery war and winning an artillery war because that's the kind of battle that Russia is designed to fight, which is why they don't go around the world provoking and starting fights. If you want to mess with Russia, you got to come to Russia. And China is the same way. China isn't going around the world fomenting coups and starting fights. China is going to lay back and say, if you want to come to us, come to us. But when you do, you're going to have to fight us on our terms. They have a different history that is centuries long. The United States worldview is incredibly myopic. It is incredibly short-lived and short-termed. And so I think it's still a little too early to call the game on the relationship between the United States and the EU, because more winters are going to come. It is going to continue to be cold during those winters, and the people in the EU are going to have to heat their homes.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. So many, let me go to Jim in New York. So many people have talked about, will Europe make it through the winter? Well, it's not this winter that's the problem. It's the one coming up, okay? That's going to be a big problem. But, I like Wilmer's point here. Maybe it is too early to call, but, I mean, if you look how the EU now is subservient to NATO. NATO is going to fight tooth and nail to continue its existence, okay? That's why we have the problem in Ukraine, to justify NATO's existence. So that's a hard one to call. But at the same time, Russia's found alternatives. The sanctions have failed, okay? And considering the Minsk agreements, how the Germans and the French disregarded them dishonestly, the Russians will say, you people are not worth negotiating with. And I think they will turn their back. I, living here, think that's a very good idea. The financial system in the West is very, very toxic. Russia got burned in 2008. They don't want to get back into it. The sanctions have failed. The world moves on. Jim.
Yeah, the Americans did think they would force Russia and or force some faction in Russia to overthrow the government because it suffers so much. The ruble would become rubble, et cetera. That didn't happen. And even though what you have now is, oh, there are new countries coming into NATO and EU and NATO are more united than ever, blah, blah, blah. The problem is this is a battle going on in Ukraine that Ukraine is going to lose, okay? My position is always that what you've got to look at here is who, not this, there's not going to be some little negotiation that's going to, that's what the Americans are looking for now. They're looking for an off-ramp, although they're saying, oh, we got to give an off-ramp to Putin. But it's not Putin who needs an off-ramp, it's the Americans who need an off-ramp because they know they're facing a situation where the Russian army may rout the Ukrainian army, and they'll be faced with a position of terrible defeat, crushing defeat, or using nuclear weapons to stave it off. And they don't want to be in that position. So they're going to put down these feelers for negotiations and deals that are really essentially Minsk 3. But Minsk 3 isn't going to work because Minsk 1 and Minsk 2 were negotiated and they didn't work. And after the battle started, there were negotiations that the UK and the US stopped in their tracks. So at the end of the end of this is going to come when the battlefield situation resolves, but either by the defeat, something that can't really be hidden, the defeat of one side or another, either Russia is going to be pushed back to its February 2022 lines, which is very unlikely, or the Ukrainian army is going to collapse. The Russians are going to hold the four oblasts plus Crimea and insist on a peace treaty, on a signed declaration by the whatever Ukrainian government is left that those were oblasts or Russian and NATO will never be Ukraine will never be a NATO member.
And Jim, I would also add, be demilitarized, no NATO infrastructure whatsoever. No. All right, let me go to Sarah. It's going back to the pipelines. Sarah, what do you think? I mean, blowing up these pipelines was an act of terrorism, international terrorism. I think the same people could use a false flag with chemical, biological, nuclear false flag operation in Ukraine. I wouldn't put them past them. Sarah.
Well, U.S. wars are always and have always been based on false flag operations. And that's the role of the complicit media, to scream it from every direction, to repeat it again and again. And this is true whether we're talking Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and all the way back to the main in, the war on Cuba and the Philippines and so on. This is the way the U.S. fights its wars, using false flag operations and a complicit media. So will they attempt that again? Yes. Will it have a different result than in the past? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So the war is going to continue on one level or another, but they're not succeeding. That's what's important to understand, that the sanctions failed. They said from the day one, this will be over and done in just a matter of weeks. Russia will collapse. Didn't happen. Here we are more than a year later. So their projections are totally false. And the whole world knows this. The dollar has lost all of its standing and is now almost a fiction waiting for complete collapse. So there's big problems facing the U.S., which they're ignoring, that have little to do with whether there's negotiations or a false flag, because they're so severe. And we're on the verge, I do think, of an economic collapse that will be more decisive than the discussions on the Ukraine, because the U.S. measures have succeeded.
Well, it's very interesting. The way I look at it here is because the interlocutors in the West are so untrustworthy that Russia will unilaterally decide when the conflict is over and we'll get it terms. Go back to December 17th, 2021. That's how it's going to end, folks. Read it. It's black and white. It was sent to NATO and it was sent to Washington. That's how it ends. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, New York, and in Jersey City. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.